This is the Greg Hill Show. Time now for The Lead.
Sean, great choice this morning when it comes to a lead. That's Bad Company. One of the only bands that was successful in having a hit song with the title of the band name, in case you were wondering.
It's a great fact.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Feel free to use that if you're ever DJing on the radio at any point, Shy.
Okay, perfect.
Throw that in kind of over the intro or maybe.
And try and hit the post?
Maybe in your post cell. You could throw that in there as a little tidbit.
Okay.
Good morning. Your lead today?
Yeah, good morning, Greg. I got two notes from last night's game for you. One positive, one negative. I'll start with the positive because it's primarily all negative here. Once again, Christian Gonzalez was freaking awesome in this game. Like, he was one-on-one with Garrett Wilson all over the field. Didn't matter the formation. Didn't matter which side of the field Garrett Wilson was on. Christian Gonzalez was one-on-one with him and, for the most part, kind of locked him down that entire game. There were multiple times, and Herbstreit even pointed this out, where Rodgers thought about taking a shot down the field to Garrett Wilson and then thought better of it because he saw Christian Gonzalez on him. Like, it was kind of impressive. And to get that kind of respect from a guy like Rodgers is a big deal. So, good job, Christian Gonzalez. But that's about all you could be happy about from last night's game. It was ugly. And the guy who was the worst out of anybody to me was Alex Van Pelt. And I don't think it was very close. Like, if you look at the Saints, they are 2-0. They have dominated. And it's primarily because of the offensive play calling. They have thrown the ball the least amount of times in football and yet are scoring like 43 points a game. And that's because their offense is so efficient in what they do, and they use a ton, and when I say a ton, I mean like on every play, they're using motion. Look at guys like Mike McDaniel and Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay.
And Bobby Slowick.
Bobby Slowick. Anybody from those trees, motion all day. It is like a cheat code for offense, and yet Alex Van Pelt just couldn't care less. Refuses to use it. He has this medieval, like 1980s basic offense that needs to figure it out. This guy has not had a good couple of weeks, and he is one of the prime reasons this offense is so bad.
You have to put a fair amount of it, though, on Jacoby Brissett.
I do. Like, okay. For me, the blame pie would be primarily Alex Van Pelt, then a large chunk Jacoby Brissett, and then another chunk would go to the offensive line.
I mean,
in that
was,
order.
Was he intending to throw that ball to Hooper or to Wiggy in Florida?
I don't know what he was doing on that one. And there was a good design play right there. Play action, Hooper across the field. He's wide open. He seals it out of bounds.
He's throwing it to DeMarcus Covington.
Yeah. All right. Shime, it's not pretty.
It's not great.
It's actually a national embarrassment, as I said earlier. And it's a primetime game. It's the only primetime game that you get this season.
And that's the performance.
And like Curtis said, Greg, they're a boring football team.
Well, you would be shocked by how many people, Curtis brought this up, how many people on the Subaru of New England text line went to bed at halftime last night. That would never happen 5 years ago.
Right, and there's not even a good storyline there. They're just like, even last week when we talked about the Seattle game, like it's a they're a boring team to watch, and that's why when we had the conversation of like, you know, are people gonna go, are the ratings gonna be? I think people were just like, you know, no expectations. I'd rather watch Red Zone than watch until they actually put Drake May in, and then I think at least people will tune in to see at least what he looks like.
Curtis, good morning.
Good morning, Greg. So, one quick nugget, the Gerard Mayo era is off to a 1-2 start. Obviously, it's his first time as a head coach. He's going to have growing pains. But the building relationships and doing things 180 degrees from his predecessor already may have cost him. And the way in which they were force-feeding Pop Douglas the ball early in this game instead of establishing the run was a mistake. And I understand.
Is that what you get when you have a player's coach? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think it's specific to a player's coach. I think Sean McVay is a player's coach, but I think he schemes up games and game plans where players get involved, but he puts the focus on the success of the play ahead of the player that's going to be targeted. And the only way Gerard Mayo is going to be able to build and sustain relationships with players is if those players win games, not if they like them or not. And that was just sort of, to me, a major red flag early in that game where it felt like the just Pop Douglas was running 60 miles horizontally to gain 1 yard. And the other is the Patriots knew this team was nowhere good enough, just like Sam Kennedy knew the Red Sox were nowhere good enough. And they didn't give a damn. And if Robert Kraft is sitting there begging to get in the NFL Hall of Fame in Canton, maybe you would expedite the process if you didn't get exposed by your lack of spending on a consistent basis after the quarterback left town. And the offensive line was an issue at the end of last year. It was an issue at the draft. It was an issue at free agency. They did nothing. They had a guy at left tackle who didn't even play left tackle in the Big Ten playing in the NFL in week three. Like, it was really and truly, like, they kept showing them and all these people, because Kraft's on the broadcast committee. They're like, oh, what an amazing owner. Look at him. Look at how tall he is on that seat. Wow. Like, why don't you look at the offensive line and that he did nothing to fix it? And I do feel they are teetering with the Boston sports fan, where the guys rightfully are sitting, guys and gals are rightfully sitting in their house saying, why would I dedicate any more of my free time to this product?
Mr. Telectric in the Twitch chat says that Mayo was absolutely outcoached last night. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would say that, but I also think that the coordinators were much better for the Jets than the Patriots. I don't know how much I give to Robert Saleh. I think Aaron Rodgers is the coach of the offense, and I think Ulbrich is a pretty good defensive coordinator. I don't know about tempo plays, but I would say not a good night for Gerard Mayo and the whole coaching staff.
All right. Gerard Mayo, programming note, will join us Monday, as he always does on Mayo Mondays on this show. So we'll get to talk to Gerard Mayo on Monday morning. We will get to the rest of this morning's leads, including one for Courtney from me.
Wow.
You and your fantasy football friends.
Oh.
I know you don't like the fantasy football people.
It's not that I don't like them. I just like think them. That they're hardos.
You don't like them, and you don't like the short kings.
Well, that I love the short kings.
Nope, that has been established. You have an issue. I think the worst thing for you would be to encounter a short fantasy football hardo.
Most like, are.
That would be.
Damn.
Yikes.
Fantasy football players are all short now, huh?
God. All right. We'll get to
just giving you what you want.
We'll get to the rest of the leads next.
You know what I wasn't ready for, Keith?
What's that?
Any of that last
that
night.
That was a mess.
Hi, sir.
Ma'am.
Holy
mackerel.
Personally, did not see any of that coming.
You had upset alert. You were saying the Pats were going to win. You were even looking ahead to the rest of the schedule.
You looked past the Jets. Picking out when I was like Niners are in play.
Yep, right.
I'm like Dolphins without Tua, foregone conclusion.
Listen, we're all wrong at times. Woo. Nothing is in play. This team, here's what it is. Last night was exactly what we feared going into the season and what a lot of us kind of thought the season might look like. And I think it was fool's gold, the Cincinnati game. You saw more signs of it, but at least they were able to move the ball and make a few stops in the Seattle game. But then last night, that just sort of exposed everything. You know, the offensive line is now down to second and third stringers. When the starters suck, the second stringers are worse. Yep. The third stringers just do that, whatever that is. That's a mess. But they couldn't move the ball at all. Defensively, they couldn't get off the field now for the second straight week, right? They've made two quarterbacks back-to-back weeks look amazing. Mm-hmm. And I know Aaron Rodgers for his career is amazing, but he wasn't amazing the first 2 weeks, but he looked great last night. Geno Smith looked great in week two. And so it was a non-competitive game where, man, like the entertainment value, zero for the Patriots. And that is rough. That was a rough go last night. Primetime, whole league is watching, and good gravy. That's what you come up with?
I mean, you say that's what you came up with. Like, the coaching staff has a lot of blame to go around today.
DeMarcus Covington joining us later.
We will talk to DeMarcus Covington, Patriots defensive coordinator, where, you know, I don't know what that was last night from him or the offensive coaching staff or the head coach or the players or the roster assembled by Elliott Wolf. But you said it, Keith. Week one was fool's gold.
Mm-hmm.
this is what we thought the Patriots were going to be. Well, actually, you know, I thought they'd go over 4.5 wins. That's not, it's worse than I thought they would be.
I thought 3. I bumped it up to 4 after the Cincy game, so shame on me.
That's worse than I thought they were capable of. I personally didn't see it coming. And even if you did, even if you thought they were going to lose, did anyone think it was going to be that bad and that ugly? And we now have our answer about week one. Was week one more about what the Patriots did or about the Bengals boycotting and overlooking the Pats? It was more about Cincinnati.
Yeah, Cincinnati,
like,
has
clearly
Oh my god, yeah. Well, and they also have a track record under Zachary Taylor of
starting
really
slow
starts. Week one, horrible week ones, bad Septembers. Plus, you throw in no T. Higgins and some of the other contract issues. Jamar Chase didn't want to be there, so you kind of toss that one to the side. And then Seattle, you know, was a very competitive game. I'm not going to like retroactively take that away and say it wasn't competitive. Went to overtime, for God's sakes.
Mm-hmm.
But still, there was a lot of issues there. We thought the defense was better after week one, and Geno Smith throws for 327 yards. They couldn't get off the field. They gave up a huge play to DK Metcalf. They gave up a bunch of like small first down plays to Smith and Jigba. They didn't even have to go up against the Seahawks' best running back, and still they didn't look great, and they couldn't get stops when they needed to, right? End of regulation and in overtime. But then you go to last night, and it's just the worst of everything. Like, there's no real bright spots from it. Like, the offense was bad across the board. The defense was bad across the board. And, you know, strange when a 21-point loss is like, didn't really, the scoreboard didn't really tell you the tale.
24-3 doesn't even come close to telling you how much of a blowout and a beatdown that
correct,
was.
Correct.
Not even close.
No.
So, silver lining, bright spot, maybe you're getting Drake May. No. Like, maybe. Yeah.
Okay, so there is that. So, maybe, Drake May makes his debut.
Maybe you're getting Drake May. And I want to get into that as we go along here on Jones and Keefe on WEEI. It's Patriots Friday. You know the number. A lot of you already lining up. 617-779-7937. Lines are open. Get in there. We'll talk about this all day long here on Jones and Keefe. You can text the show 37937. You can interact on Twitter and Instagram at Jones and Keefe. You can watch on Twitch, twitch.tv/BostonWEEI, or on YouTube. Just subscribe to WEEI. So, Keefe, I'm ready to bend the knee. Like, I thought there were wins on the schedule. I thought the schedule just as of yesterday didn't look so bad. You couldn't have played worse than last night.
It's just funny because on Tier Tuesday, we put them in the tier of could be worse.
And I right.
Which I'm not, it turns out it can be worse.
And it is worse. They need to move to number 2 pick watch.
Yeah,
as someone tweeted at you last night,
correct,
at
Keith right.
21, we need to move this team to number 2 pick watch because they're in the mix for not Carolina bad, but pretty damn close. I don't even know where to start with last night.
All right, let's start with this.
They can't protect Jacoby Brissett.
No.
Jacoby Brissett stinks. The defense, I've never been less confident in a defense getting a stop on third down. They made Aaron Rodgers look like vintage MVP Aaron Rodgers. So I really don't know where to start. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's start with this because Drake May came in at the end of the game. So let's work our way towards Drake May. Let's start with the beginning of the game where we were wondering if Pop Douglas, Pop on the tape Douglas, who, you know, says he's been open.
Popping off in the locker room.
Pop off Douglas. He of the zero career touchdown catches. And I'm very pro receiver. You know, it pains me to say this, but he was sounding like a guy who was like Terrell Owens or Randy Moss or one of these guys. He's not. And he wanted the ball. And you and I both said yesterday, so this isn't revisionist history, because yesterday on the show we were saying there is a fine line. They shouldn't turn it over. They're not a pass team. But it doesn't mean you avoid your wide receivers. You can't have 3 wide receiver catches in a game like you did against Seattle.
Correct.
So that number needs to go higher, but you also can't overnight turn into something that you're not and complete 25 catches to receivers. That's not going to happen either. And so this is a team who needs to run the ball. The Jets are a team that was giving up yards on the ground going into last night. So they should have ran way more than they did. Next thing you know, they're behind. So they start passing. That's what I was going to say. They start passing. They start trying to get Pop Douglas the ball.
Yeah, so literally,
I didn't see that coming.
Literally the first play was play action.
Yep.
And,
for 0 yards.
Brissett had to just huck the ball away.
Gets it to his guy, Hunter Henry, for 0 yards.
And I believe 7 of the first 9 plays were passes. I meant to double check that. I think it's 7 out of the first 9 were passes.
I mean, the very first series was what? It was pass to Henry for 0, 1 yard for Stevenson, and then a deep incomplete pass, then punt. And that's so there was a lot of that. There's a lot of punting. Bryce Behringer, a lot of action for
good
him.
Good game for him.
Yep.
Bryce punt.
So you do have that. But no, I thought, were they really going to go to Pop Douglas? And turns out they were. And like that was not the right way to do it. So Pop Douglas ended the night with 9 targets and a carry.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he ended up with 7 catches for 69 yards, 1 carry for 9 yards. If Pop Douglas is the offense, though, you're screwed.
Yeah, you're I think we saw that last night. You're screwed. Yeah.
Ramondre Stevenson. Now, I know there's issues with Ramondre Stevenson. He fumbled. He's fumbled in every game,
yep.
But he finally lost a fumble last night. He also set himself back on his one big run. He had the face mask where he, like, ripped the helmet off. But still, you've 6 carries? Like, what the hell is that? He goes from, like, 25 carries one week to 6?
So I thought Mike Giardi had a good tweet on this after the game. He says, I have a lot of questions tonight. The offensive approach seemed designated to satiate the grumbling pass catchers, which is what you were saying. Different wording.
I don't know any of those words. Designed but I think to we
satiate.
Said the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You want to keep the receivers happy.
Got it.
Satiate the grumbling pass catchers, despite the fact that the Jets have been porous against the run for the last couple of years.
Yes.
Then when the game script flipped, the Patriots couldn't do what they do best. Right. When you're down 2 scores, you can't run the way you want to run.
But even being down 2 scores, like as bad as the first half was, right? So you're sitting there at halftime, you're like, what the hell was that? It was 14-3 and you were getting the ball.
Yeah, I kind of.
Like you can still run.
It's crazy in retrospect. It's crazy. I thought they could win the game. It's crazy. I thought they were going to be better than I thought. Yeah. But at halftime, another crazy thing, I kind of still thought they were in the game.
It's 14-3. You know, the Jets missed the field goal. And so even though you've been absolutely dominated at that point, it's 11 points. So that doesn't mean you need to just air it out when you get the ball. Like you could still run, but at that point it was, that ship had sailed, I guess, for them.
No, it had. And so the game plan was terrible last night. They couldn't tackle. I think the final number was 13 missed tackles for 100 extra yards for the Jets last night.
I also don't really understand that part of it.
The stat?
No, the lack
of tackling.
They tackled the snot out of it against Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And then they were a little bit worse, right? There was a couple more broken tackles against Seattle. But then last night, a ton of missed tackles. It's the same team. It's like the same month of the season. Now, I know there's no Bentley, right? Like, so there is some players that didn't get as many reps in week one as you do in week three. But as a team, I thought they'd be much better tackling than they were.
Yeah, the lasting image from last night is Alex Austin, who replaced crappy Marco Wilson. But now you get crappy Alex Austin. Is holding on to Alan Lazard's ripped jersey, stretched all the way to the end zone, breaking away on a missed tackle.
Yeah.
So that's the lasting image. The numbers last night are beyond ugly. At halftime, the Patriots have been outgained 252-40.
They couldn't get off the field, right? Like
the defense.
The defense could not get off the field.
The offense excelled at getting off the field. The defense couldn't get off the field.
Oh, Jones, offense had no problem getting off the field.
No,
they were off the field, no problem. You want a punt? I'll give you a punt.
They were among the best at it, yeah.
Yeah, the Patriots had 4 possessions in the first half, and one of them was end of half. Almost doesn't really count. So even some of the yards they got were garbage yards. They gave them that last catch going into the half. Like, go ahead, take it.
Not great, Bob.
Nope. So they went punt, field goal. That's all they had. They only had 3 possessions because after the Jets punted on their first possession, they had a 8-play touchdown drive of 4-13. But then this is the killer. They had a 13-play, 7-minute and 47-second drive. And then they had a 12-play drive that actually ended in a missed field goal.
Yeah.
So they were very fortunate that it wasn't, you know, at minimum 17-3.
No, time of possession was over 40 minutes for the Jets last night.
Lopsided.
First downs again at halftime were 17-4. Like, it's as bad as it could. You would never know it if you just woke up and looked at the score.
Yeah.
It was as lopsided of a game.
I'm surprised they had 4 first downs.
No, it's true.
That does seem a little much.
We were talking about it before the show. I think some of them were by penalty. I think it was like pass interferences on Tyquan Thornton, which were questionable. And so it was as lopsided of a game as you're going to get. And the bottom line is Mayo didn't have him ready to go. Like, we can put it on Covington and his game plan or Alex Van Pelt and his game plan. Yeah. You're the head coach.
Yeah, yeah.
The team
Short week.
The team wasn't ready to go. Not at all. The Jets were ready to go. Aaron Rodgers was ready to go.
How about my guy Rodgers?
He was great.
Duke could spin it still.
Keith, another thing I was wrong about.
He could spin it.
He was moving well.
He did. He scooted nicely.
I didn't see that coming at all. He looked like a 25-year-old. Moving around on the field.
He looked really comfortable, though, which is a Patriots issue.
Mayo didn't have them ready to go. Like, Brissett sucks. The defense sucks. The offensive line sucks. Elliot Wolf sucks at building a team. The defensive game plan sucked. They can't tackle. The offensive game plan sucked. They threw too much. All of it sucked. Mayo didn't have them ready to go.
No, he did not. I mean, everything that I guess could have gone wrong in a way did. Like, it was just, it was a mess. It was embarrassing. It was against a division opponent in what I don't know. You and I felt like it was a winnable game. You gave them the win. I thought it was going to be close. Like, just going into it, you know, both teams were 1-1. The Jets, I liked much more long-term in this season. But if you looked at what they did the first 2 weeks, they weren't all that intimidating a presence. Rodgers hadn't gone over 200 yards passing. You could run on them, or so we thought, and they didn't go to any of that. Yeah, it's amazing when you just look at all the possessions for the Patriots in the game.
I'd rather not.
Punt, punt, field goal, end of half. Yeah. Punt, punt, fumble, punt, end of game. That's it. That was
Iowa's box score.
Yeah, no, oh, it is. Iowa Hawkeyes.
It is.
No, but the difference is Iowa's not giving up 24.
Right.
You know, it's a 9-3. Like, who's going to
Iowa gonna play defense.
Yeah, so they 24-3. 24, it's almost as though you were playing a team that, like, didn't want to rub it in. Because it was like they could do whatever they wanted, and yet they still only got to 24. But the game was never in doubt. Like, the game, like, once they took control of the game, once we saw the Patriots have a couple of possessions, you're like, oh, they're not going anywhere.
No. No, they are not.
The Afternoon Show with Christian Arcan and Andy Hart starts now on WEEI.
WEEI Afternoons, Christian Arcan, Andy Hart here with you until past 6 o'clock today. We got a lot to talk about. A disaster for the Patriots at the Meadowlands last night. Primetime look at everything that's wrong with this team. We saw it all up close and personal. All of the flaws on display with a big spotlight on them as Aaron Rodgers, the second straight quarterback to take this defense apart. The offense still very much stuck in the mud when it comes to moving the ball, really, at all. I mean, they couldn't even run it last night. It was a total failure offensively from every way you look at it. And outside of the punting, there was really nothing to celebrate. And also, well, maybe the intro to the broadcast, which
Shut
a
it.
Lot of people said was maybe the highlight of the entire night. I'd say the highlight of the broadcast in general. I don't know if Andy Hart would agree with that, but yes, here we are reacting to a Patriots team that just 2 weeks ago seemed like not the bell of the ball or anything, Andy, but it definitely seemed like they were one of the teams that might surprise people this year. 2 weeks later, it seems like the season is unraveling.
Yeah, I'm going to say something that'll piss a lot of people off, but I kind of jokingly said it in the Six Rings postgame show after week one. 1-16 might be still in play for this football team because they are trending very quickly in the wrong direction. And I don't just mean tackling and blocking and all the fundamental technical aspects that suck right now. The coaches, the sort of air around the team, we talked about it yesterday that this was a Gerard Mayo culture pivotal week and turning point. And if that's true, they absolutely laid an egg and failed the test in a game that, I know we say this a lot in this business, wasn't nearly as close as the final score would indicate. They, as the players accurately assessed, absolutely got their ass kicked by the New York Jets. And they got some soul searching to do on this long week in a lot of ways. Not just, hey, how do I tackle? Hey, how do I block better? They got to figure out how to come together as a team because right now it's ugly.
Yeah, and it really came apart pretty quickly because week one against that Bengals team, they weren't perfect. I mean, we all remember coming in and talking about the game and how they ran the ball well and the defense was strong and they had better conditioning than the Bengals and some other things that were fine in week one. And you look at that and think, well, they can build off of that. But at the very least, they got the fundamentals down. They're tackling, they're blocking up the middle and making space for Ramondre Stevenson. Even when he did get hit, you know, he had some room after that to get yards. They were getting in the end zone. They were sustaining long drives. You didn't see really any of that. I mean, you didn't see anything that was working at all in the first 2 weeks, and not much was working. Hunter Henry, they tried to give him the ball a couple of times. Pop Douglas on offense got force-fed the ball and had a decent little game. But if you shut down the run with this team, they're mincemeat. They can't do anything. I mean, that's basically it. You're looking at a team that's so infuriatingly one-dimensional that if you take that one dimension away, it's over. I mean, it was over by halftime.
And we talked about that one dimensionality that, you know, there was sort of an unsustainability to it in that it was all yards after contact. It's not right. Like the line of scrimmage was being pushed downfield and, oh, you're 5 yards downfield before you even get touched. And then you mix in the fact that your superstar in the making running back, who has, I believe, gotten some of the attention he deserves through the first couple weeks, now don't look, but he's got a bit of a fumbling problem. And we actually saw the camera angles this time, which wasn't so much of a fumble as a robbery, a takeaway. Yeah. A Teddy Bruschi style, I want it more. Remember that against the Colts in Dominic
Rhodes? Where they were falling down together? He just ripped it out of the guy's hand. I remember that, yep.
And I thought at that time, that sort of symbolized the Patriots wanting it more, the more physical team wanting it more. And I thought last night, this sort of symbolized the Patriots team getting it taken from them, get it handed to them, and the other team just wanting it more and playing the game on its terms. And in some ways, there's no shame in that. Because I know people wanted to bury the Jets after week one and praise the Patriots, but the Jets are a pretty talented football team with a pretty talented quarterback who looks like he's kind of hitting his 40-year-old stride in what he is as a player. Although, I'd also say, idiot Andy said, he doesn't move anymore. He looked pretty good on the move. He looked very good booting out. They were winning the boot game, right? When we boot, Jacoby Brissett's got a dude right in his face immediately. Mm-hmm. When they boot it out, he's just running and finds a nice receiver for like 12 yards and a first down, a tight end or something. So this was, you know, our guy Tommy Freeze Pops on WEEI.com put the ups and downs, and the only ups he had were the punter and the kicker. I agree with him. No one else, if you were a coach or a player, deserved anything but a thumbs down because... You know, even Keon White, I thought, was close. He brings energy and effort and attitude and physicality. But even he was talking about, you know, his failures in letting Rodgers get outside the pocket and his failures in missed tackles. And I think, to me, that was the most alarming thing. The missed tackles. Like, what the hell happened? They went from a perfect tackling team to almost every first contact was broken. Almost nobody. And... there were touchdowns, there were tackles for a loss that turned into gains for the Jets. It was cornerbacks, defensive linemen, linebackers, safeties, everybody. And that, I mean, I guess you might be able to just chalk it up to tired and short week and something like that, make excuses.
Okay, that doesn't, you can't do that. I'm sorry. Those running backs were rolling off of your tackles like water off a duck. I mean, that I've never seen anything like it. It was every single time, every single running play. You had no chance. You'd go up there and they'd, you know, get in position, and these guys, Breece Hall and the other kid, would just roll right off them like they weren't even there. It was unbelievable. I didn't think that would happen to this team. I honestly didn't. I thought that even in a short week, you got a young enough, conditioned enough team going up against 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers here that you'll be able to go in there and at the very least make him think twice on defense. And, man, I mean, Geno Smith had a good game against you. Rodgers was better, I thought. I mean, it was very sort of surgical, it seemed like. There was never any point where it seemed like Rodgers was really in distress and that the defense was really putting anything on him. They didn't have one 3-and-out last night. The Jets did not go 3-and-out one time in that entire game. How are we gonna pump up the defense on a night like that? Like, they didn't score 40 points. You know, it wasn't like a Saints win or anything. But if you can't even get them to go 3-and-out one time in a 4 quarters of football, that is a dominating performance. You got dominated on both sides, 100%.
This is not great.
Not great. And really, the only thing that stopped the Jets early were penalties. They had a couple holding calls that sort of derailed a couple drives. Other than that, there was that one point, I think Rodgers was like 12 of 12, and his first incompletion was because Garrett Wilson was just out of bounds catching the ball on the sideline. This was a systematic, and the Jets were playing on a short week too, right? I know they're at home, and I saw some Patriots fans trying to rationalize, this is a classic road team Thursday night performance. Okay, you can chalk it up to that. You can continue to chalk these things up to whatever you want. I think it's more of this team's got some issues, and first and foremost, we know where it starts. It starts the same place we've been talking for months and months and months. The offensive line, that issue that Jerod Mayo kept telling us was overblown, is down to 7th and 8th stringers, but it almost doesn't matter because the first stringers aren't very good, and then the backups are worse, and that derails everything they're trying to do offensively.
Yeah, that was that I think is really where you have to start. Not in terms of what was the most disappointing, because I don't think people were necessarily disappointed by the bad O-line play. People were expecting it. I think more people were disappointed by the defense, but in terms of what was a bigger problem, what ended up sinking their ship last night. I mean, it was, you felt bad for Brissett by the end of the first quarter. Like he was getting folded backwards over his legs, and it was just like, you know, and not like, come on, somebody stand up for this guy. And he's a tough guy, you know. He kept bouncing back up and getting in that huddle and trying to put something together. And man, I mean, it would not happen for him. And I hate to keep saying this, but, you know, we talked about this yesterday. The New York Jets had a bad offensive line last year, too. And you know what they did? They went out and addressed it. They traded for a tackle. They signed a tackle. They drafted a tackle. Now, I'm not saying you had to do all of that, because you couldn't have done all that and also drafted Drake May. You would have had to go back or something. And if you wanted to get a left tackle, they got Fanau or whatever at 11th overall. At 11th overall. So, I mean, you would have had to finagle some things, but you could have done the rest of that and still drafted Drake May and still had plenty of cap space and all that other stuff, and you decided not to. You decided to just go with right tackles who were one step out the door of the game, a right tackle who was, Fashanu's teammate at Penn State, and really nothing else. You know, you picked up some guys off the waiver wire. One of them got in last night, that giant guy, which, by the way, I'm interested in DeMontre Jacobs and what happens with him, just for like the scientific experiment of either you got this diamond in the rough guy who's 6'9", 400 pounds, whatever he is, and he's good, or you have a guy that big who sucks, which I think is also equally an entertaining prospect to watch on a Sunday going forward, a giant guy who just keeps getting pushed over. Like, that's funny, but that's about where we are with this team here. It's really, you know, like there's nothing to feel good about from that game.
So last night we took a lot of calls, and I want to thank all the callers that called into the Six Rings postgame show. I did not expect the lines to be lit like they were after midnight, but apparently being upset about a game makes it difficult to sleep, so instead you call Fitzy and Hart. Appreciate
it. I'm not surprised by that. That was that kind of game. It was that kind of game where you call in and you're like, I got to vent about this because this season may not be, you know, like 2 weeks ago I was thinking this season might be something special, or at least something
special,
surprising. Maybe not special, but yeah, you know, maybe there's something here. This could be a 500 team. What a turnaround that would be. And now that's starting to fly out the window.
It's out the window, and it flew away, and it's hard to see. Like, it's gone. Don't even think about getting it back. But some of them, at least one or two callers, were sort of rethinking the offseason and the draft process. And I don't think this applies to you, because I don't think you were in love with the quarterback position. But seeing how this is unfolding before us, do you retroactively go back and prioritize tackle in the draft? Like, would you become a Joe Alt guy, I guess, is my question. Because there were some people that are like, look at Joe Alt, he's kicking ass out with the Chargers. Would you want to do that? Whatever. Does this reconfigure the way you look at the draft?
Not the draft, no. I would have gone much more aggressively after the tackles who were out there in free agency, or maybe tried to swing a trade or something like that. I would have gone wide receiver, and I said that at the time. You know, I was thinking there's a lot of good wide receivers here, or at least guys who were very productive in college and seem like they maybe translate well into the modern NFL game. And it just, you know, the league agreed. There was a ton of guys who went in the first round, bunch of guys in the second round. Like, there's a lot of wide receivers who got drafted last year, and I thought getting one of the elite ones of those guys, that could maybe be a transformative thing. You can fill in an offensive line. You can patch that over with a veteran for a year or two. I don't think you need to get some foundational guy there with that. I was more looking to upgrade the playmakers on the offense, and I think you could have, you know, addressed the tackle in a long-term way somewhere else down the road. I didn't think that had to happen last year, even if you'd passed up on Drake May.
Would you go to bait early? You didn't see Drake May running for a first down and then a fourth down where he moved his feet a little bit, boom, hits Pop Douglas over the middle. That didn't excite you?
No, that was great. I was doing backflips in my living room.
Feel your energy.
It was pretty, it was good to see him out there at the very least.
Yeah,
you know,
it was a taste of things to come. And, you know, in both ways, he'll run for first downs, he'll throw for first downs, and he's going to get rock bottomed or whatever suplex or whatever he needs to show that he can take big hits and get up like his veteran leader is doing right now. But I actually liked it. I'm with you. Like, it just starts the process. And I don't think it actually means anything for this week necessarily, but it starts the process. It shows, to me, anyway, that those that are dreaming of, well, you're not playing him till Christmas, I think you're wrong. He's playing already in week 3. That means he's starting sooner rather than later, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that timeline got moved up a bit yesterday, and that not because I think Brissett's going to be able to, you know, be tapping out or anything like that, but he did. He's getting banged up. You can see it, and eventually it's just going to make more sense to put the kid out there. So there you go. By the way, I am live in the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, which is brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and the Freedom of Choice. Shop deals built for you on the New England Edition F-150, official truck of the Boston Red Sox. If you're watching on Twitch, we have a camera problem down here. That's the reason why you can't see me right now. You can see Andy in his dorm room over at Tufts.
This is payback for last night. No, we don't need any stinking cameras on our can. He got enough airtime last night. It's all hard all the time.
That's true. That is it's a trade I'll make. That's what we're talking about here. But that was, yes. I mean, listen, who am I to argue with the great people over at NFL Films? They seem
they must
to
be blind,
very astute deaf, judges of character and of takes, I think. Both of those things. So, yeah, we can get into that a little bit later.
This one hurt. Patriots offense just cannot seem to put one foot in front of the other when it comes to basketball.
They really couldn't. And you know what? The take continued to be to ring true all throughout the game. I don't remember what the New York guy said, but it was not the fan, right? It was EEI, and it was not the fan. It was their ESPN station, I think, right?
I didn't see it. I missed the whole thing. When did it happen?
Oh, you missed the whole thing, huh? I can tell you exactly where it was on the Amazon broadcast. It was at 1:07 and 19 seconds. And I know that because I paused it and sent it to all my friends, all three
you
of them.
Egomaniac loser.
I mean, come on.
Good Lord.
You know, it's the NFL Films. A big deal. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We got open phone lines for you here, Patriots fans. I know a lot of you want to vent. A lot of you did last night, and we have room for you to do it again here right now. The biggest disappointment last night, I think we both probably agree on this, Andy, but what do you think it was?
The tackling. You know, if you're going to narrow it down to one aspect of the game, the tackling.
Defense in general is what I was going to say, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, defense was not good, but if they tackle better, I think they'd be better. Like, that was a very granular part of their failures on defense, their failures on third. The touchdown, you know, you could have tackled Lazard at, like, the 8-yard line, 10-yard line, and he just rips his way free to get through, and I wasn't sure. That's one thing I thought maybe we could count on, is that Tavai and Peppers and Duggar and Jonathan right. Jones, and these are tacklers. And apparently now I have nothing to count on, because I don't feel good about anything. Actually, Bryce Behringer, I feel good about, because Joey Sly, there's missed kicks coming. I have concerns about that. So really, your punter is your best player, and that tells you exactly where you are as a football team.
Yeah, the defense, I think, was the biggest disappointment in terms of what the expectations were. But I'd say in terms of what, like, going forward and what this season was supposed to be and now what it looks like it's going to be, I might change my vote to Ramondre Stevenson, honestly. Like, he did have two good, pretty good weeks. But to see him fumble all 3 weeks, fumbled in all three games. Like, he's batting 1,000 when it comes to fumbles, which, yep. I mean, people are pining for the days of Bill Belichick. If that's something you really like, then this guy's on the bench for at least a week or two here. He's not going back into those games. You fumble that much on a Belichick team, you're coming out of the game, maybe for more than just that game, too. So, like, that, ask Stephen Ridley. Like,
yeah, but they don't have a backup.
I know they don't. That's the problem. Like, probably, yeah. Or Hasty, or they call, what's his face?
Kevin
up off
Harris.
Harris up off the practice squad. Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not saying I agree with it, but to see Stevenson go out like that, get bottled up like that, and turn it over, that, you know, like, if that, we talked about this 2 weeks ago. If the offensive line gets run down so much that they can't even move the ball on the ground, they don't have anything else. And it's not sustainable to assume that Ramondre Stevenson can do this all year with this kind of workload. Running backs are getting injured all over the league right now. This is bad. Like, this is a bad situation to be in.
It's absolutely, and it's when you're one-dimensional, and it's when you're too reliant on one guy, and
yeah,
when you don't really have, you know, alternate pitches, secondary pitches, right? They have him, whatever you want to call it, whether that's a fastball or a changeup in modern football, that's what they have. And if you put down a different finger, they're just going to shake it off. Now, there's also something to be said where they didn't really establish the run early in a way that they probably should have. And even Alex Van Pelt has admitted and acknowledged that the way they started that game might not have been the best approach, to go 3-and-out really quickly and then give the ball back to Rodgers against a Jets defense that has been struggling to run to stop the run. And, you know, we're going to run the ball. That's our identity. All this bravado that we've heard from Gerard Mayo in this offense, I didn't even think they ran the ball. Then they get into the cute stuff. We're going to get Demario Douglas involved.
Right.
Wee, whoopee, yippee, happy, whoopee. He can be happy now.
I thought he looked pretty good. Like, honestly, he got the ball. He made some moves. He picked up a first down or two. Like,
I was
happy with that. I mean, they got to incorporate other things here. Other things have to work. But he proved that if you give him the ball, he can be somewhat productive with it.
Absolutely. And
that's a step up from everybody else. I mean, come on.
I mean, the running game has been productive. You're right about the fumbles, but the running game has been productive. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, I said this to Fitzy last night. So I look at the stat sheet, and Austin Hooper and Hunter Henry combined for 2 catches for 19 yards, I believe. Should they bitch this week? Should they? I don't even know how I'm supposed to, you know, prove myself if I don't get the football. Like, should they bitch? And now Alex Van Pelt has to feed
it
them.
It clearly works.
Yeah, if you bitch about your contract, you get paid. If you bitch about your touches, you get touches. So,
or you get traded.
Just bitch about things. I want cake. I'm going to bitch about cake for an hour and see if a cake shows up courtesy of Gerard Mayo and Alex Van Pelt.
Well, listen, if things keep going this way, the guys who are doing the most bitching may end up getting traded. I mean, this is, you know, Hunter Henry doesn't like what's going on here. Like, he may not want to play here. That's Jonathan Jones, you know, our buddy who we talked to on Mondays. His name's popped up already as a guy that if the Patriots season really comes apart and they start looking for draft capital, I mean, listen, I wouldn't. I think that you're not that far off, but, you know, games like last night have me reconsidering this timeline of this rebuild a little bit because, you know, you got a bunch of holes still on this roster, and the only one you really filled was a quarterback, and that's still to be determined if that's going to work. You know, you don't know that right away. Speaking of the quarterback, Gerard Mayo was asked about the offensive line and if that made him hesitant to want to put in Drake May, and I thought this answer was interesting, Brian, if we have it.
Well, like I said, in the second half, you know, I felt like our offensive line, they just weren't blocking the way they did at earlier parts of the game. It definitely was something that I thought of personally, but at the same time, I thought it was too good of an opportunity for him to go out there and get some experience.
All right, so they weren't blocking the way they were earlier in the game. I don't know what game he's talking about.
Wasn't
that game last night. They never blocked well, I didn't think. And
they haven't blocked well all year.
They really haven't. I mean, when it comes to pass blocking, they certainly have not. And that was an interesting way to answer that. A lot of people online, and I think, you know, I heard some callers to you guys last night, don't think that Mayo should have put May in that game. And I think there's a big divide right now among Patriots fans as to whether or not they should have done that last night. I am perfectly and firmly in the camp of, yes, put him in the game and get him some reps and get him out there and let's get this show on the road here with Drake May. But I feel like a lot of Patriots fans are not. And even though I don't agree with it, I do understand it. We'll get into more of that right after Brian Frisoco, who produced that tremendous montage in the beginning. Bravo, Brian, by the way.
Bravo.
That's the first montage I think he's ever made. And it was very, very good. So well done there. He'll tell you what's trending. And when we come back, should Mayo have kept May on the bench last night? We'll discuss with you at 617-779-7937 next.
It is a Patriots Friday, and if you're getting ready to wager the weekend, then be listening in 15 minutes or so when we will be joined by our guy Nick Costos, and he will give you a way to win some money this weekend. Curtis, these are the text messages that you get when your football team is in disarray. This is a 781 text. On the Subaru of New England text line. What's jarring is that the Matt Patricia run offense looked better than this offense after three games. I don't know if I can say
I
that.
Told you that. I said that to you, Greg.
Shine said that off air this morning to me as well.
He did, really?
In a bit of a joking manner, but yes, it's not wrong.
I told you that this passing last year's passing offense will look better than this year's passing offense if you keep Jacoby Brissett in there all season long.
Well, last year was Bill O'Brien. That wasn't
two years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
2 years. I agree with that 100%.
But look at where they haven't invested. They didn't do the only acquisition of note was KJ Osborne. Who sucks.
Who, by the way, according to the data, is open all the time but is getting zero targets. Like last night, he was on the field for, I believe it was 79% of the offensive snaps, not one target the entire game.
It's amazing.
Does he just not see him?
I don't know. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I think that because there's a couple times, Greg, and you watched that game last night, there's a couple times where, like, okay, the pocket's clean, and you're like, who's he looking at? You're like, throw the football, throw the football, throw the football. And so I think that, and this is what I said, I think that the guys need to be so wide open for him to really have to let it fly. And like, when he threw it to Austin Hooper, he could clearly tell when he hit his back foot and he was ready to throw the football, he could tell that Austin Hooper was wide open.
Yeah, he blew it by him by 10 right. yards.
But if there's any, like, if the separation isn't massive, I think he gets the yips and he's like, I'm not throwing it there because that window's not open. That window's too tight for me.
And it was so jarring, the juxtaposition of Rodgers totally in control. I thought Herb Street did a good job of breaking down how he was looking off cornerbacks and then going to another receiver. It just, every time he got the ball, he knew exactly what he was doing. That first touchdown pass to Lazard, that was the run play that he audibled out of at the last second. Like,
yeah.
And then you see Jacoby Brissett. Doesn't it feel like a first down is like how we viewed a touchdown? It's like, oh my God! Like, they completed a pass for 7 yards. It's a cause for celebration.
We need to get to the cross insurance player spotlight. Is there one when it comes to the New England Patriots last night?
Aaron Rodgers.
I know.
Maybe Christian Gonzalez. Even your pass defense wasn't great.
Duggar had the leverage call.
Yeah, good flag by him.
Sly's the only guy that got any points on the board.
Good kick. That's right. Yeah. Right
good
down
job,
the middle.
Sly.
Cross Insurance, official insurance broker of the New England Patriots.
I mean, it's hard to find somebody that you look at and go, okay, you know, they were good. They even like Pop Douglas, I get it. Like, I think he's a solid player. But even him, like, you know, you're complaining like you're Justin Jefferson. And, like, even you get him the ball and it's like, all right. I mean, he does all right for you. I wonder what Alex Van Pelt, like, what his offensive scheme is. Like, and I know he says he wants to run the football, but you only had, what, between Ramondre and Gibson, what they have, like, 11 carries total?
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Rodgers looked really good. There was that, you had that Jennings sack, and they were set back. They were two and 17, and throws a beautiful ball to Conklin. And he looks really, really good. I mean, I guess injury is always the concern with him.
Well, but playoffs, losing to inferior teams. But
he's got a real defense now, though.
That was a wild stat last night, though. Aaron Rodgers has 11 playoff wins. Tom Brady has 10 after turning 40. Pretty wild. But I would say Aaron Rodgers could have put up 60. Anybody who looks at the score, like, the Jets were toying with you. If they wanted to score more, they would have put up another 21 points.
It felt like that Miami game last year where you technically only lost by 7, but Miami was in control the entire time and probably could have scored another 30 if they wanted to.
Yeah. This is Brendan from Weymouth. What's up, Brendan?
Hey, guys. What's going on? I just wanted to say that I think there's plenty of examples of average quarterbacks that were put in below average situations to start their careers, like Ryan Tannehill with the Dolphins, Alex Smith with the Niners, Geno Smith with the Jets, average guys that were put in with below average talent that went on to show that they're serviceable players. So my question for you guys is, what if Drake May is one of those average players and then he's put in into this terrible situation and then you guys all just think he sucks because he can't overcome average talent?
Because Brendan, if he's Geno Smith, then you need another quarterback anyway.
And three of those guys, by the way, weren't ruined. Like, Geno Smith has had a great second half of his career. Ryan Tannehill had a good stint in Tennessee. Alex Smith finished his career in San Francisco well and then went on to be a playoff Pro Bowl quarterback in Kansas City.
And remember, Miami
I think those guys are good examples of it's possible to make a guy look bad if you have bad talent around him. And Drake May, if he gets thrown in on this team with all this below average talent, you guys are going to think he sucks because he has no receivers, he has a bad coaching staff, and he has a bad offensive line.
But no, none of those players were ruined. Like, that's what we're talking about. If you are able to be Zach Wilson or Mac Jones, then you are not an elite quarterback in the NFL.
And like I don't like
and Alex Smith was good in San Francisco. And remember, Ryan Tannehill in Miami, they gave him a bunch of money thinking that he was the guy for this team. Remember, Miami gave him a ton of money because he had a year, maybe a year or two where he played well. Alex Smith was good in San Francisco. He took San Francisco to the playoffs maybe 2 years before he ends up in Kansas City. Geno Smith is the only one that kind of really didn't perform well, or you could say was on a bad team, didn't perform well, and then it really took him a long time to get his second chance.
But this staff, Greg, is another example of Kraft being cheap.
Well, that's Elliot Wolf, though. Well, it's
what?
He chose these guys, but Curtis, they
didn't controls have a... he controls it all though. You can't like Elliot,
Robert Kraft.
Yes,
does,
yeah. Yes,
I understand that.
Yeah, but it's not on Kraft when it comes to the staff.
What?
No,
so you think if Elliot Wolf said, "I want to bring in this coordinator for $6 million a year," Kraft would say, "Okay."
And but how is it not on? How is it not on Kraft about the staff? He just told you that he picked out Jerod Mayo 5 years ago. He chooses the staff.
No, he chose the head coach, but the head coach didn't have the ability to choose his own offensive staff.
Well, nobody wanted to come here, Wiggy.
Well, maybe that's because there's not enough zeros. Right?
It's not about zeros. You think a guy like
Alex Smith, Alex Van Pelt appears to be a giant zero.
No. I'm saying like it wasn't like they were out there trying to get, I don't know, Sean Payton as an offensive coordinator and he's asking for $6 million. The guys that they were going after were all guys that you look at and go, well, they're only going to be making Kraft's paying these guys $1 million or $2 million for coordinator jobs.
I believe the fact that Bill is being paid by Robert Kraft this season not to coach at $30 million impacted the level of coaching on this staff, and I will not be dissuaded off that.
Who's a guy that you would say, oh, they couldn't afford to
Kubiak,
get?
Kubiak, the baby Kubiak. He's doing a great job this year.
Yeah, but you think, I bet you he's probably only $1 million. I bet he would make the same as Alex Van Pelt.
Okay, but what if you offered him $1 million more than whatever he's getting this year?
He's going to look at the situation. It's very similar to
his salary is $1.5 million.
Right. So if you offered him $2.5 million, I bet you he's here.
Right. But his situation, no, because he's probably going to do what Bobby Slowick did, Shime's boy, and he's going to go, is it worth me going to a team where maybe I might have some issues, and then that's going to affect how the league views me as a coordinator because I don't have the talent.
But if Shime's right about Drake May, then this would be a very attractive job because you're going to elevate a guy that's going to be a stud in the NFL.
But at the time, you didn't know it was going to be Drake May. The draft hadn't happened yet.
This is Dylan from Detroit. What's up, Dylan? Dylan, you there?
My apologies. I didn't hear.
Yeah. What's up?
Yeah, so I had I guess after watching Drake May last night, I felt I've always been an advocate for Drake May sitting out this whole year and us potentially getting some, not weapons, but offensive line from the draft. But after watching him taking a couple hits and him actually feeling comfortable and confident, I would say, and I get it from the Bryce Young, it seems like he's ruined in Carolina. Wouldn't you guys kind of agree that he looks more confident as a player since even with North Carolina and what he went through with North Carolina and the changes?
I mean, Shime, you watched a lot of film.
I did.
Did you?
Hours.
Did he? I mean, it's you can't judge him on last night.
No, I thought everybody was very laissez-faire on that final drive.
He looked
drive
a little
night.
Bit like deer in the headlights-ish to start.
I think until he took that sack where he kind of spun around like a top and then was speared into the ground, once he popped up from that, he looked better. He looked like he was like in the game a little bit more. But at first, I totally agree. Definitely a little deer in the headlights on those first couple snaps.
Of course he did. Anybody would.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's your first snaps as an NFL quarterback.
Well, you didn't even know the play on his, if I remember
correctly.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it's going to be as a guy who's coming in. You got those nervous jitters, and then for you as the quarterback, you know, there's a lot of expectations there. So I think that ultimately, you know, he looks at it and goes, man, all right, that's why I said, and then if he's not getting all the reps, he's probably still a little bit in his mind, like, do I know enough of this to where I can feel comfortable.
Wait, do we lose Wiggy?
I think we lost.
I was just going to commend you and say you were able to figure out how to be on Twitch this morning from Miami, Florida, but I think we lost you.
Yeah, my my battery is
oh boy.
Jacking. Oh, late night?
No, but I got the new what's it called? The new iPhone, and so it has a different charger, so
the
it's harder to find.
The iPhone 16?
No, the 15 or whatever the hell it is. It's got the new charger, so it's harder to find the chargers. So my juice is coming back. So
okie dokie.
And I don't have my charger with me.
Oh. All right. Well, we're gonna get to Nick Costos coming up, and he will tell you how to wager this weekend. Right now, Courtney, and what is trending this hour?
Now here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by Subaru of New England. The Patriots fall to 1-2 on the season with a brutal 24-3 loss to the Jets. Aaron Rodgers looked like his old self. He completed 27 of 35 passes for 281 yards and 2 touchdowns. The BC Eagles have a night game tomorrow night, 8 p.m. kickoff at Alumni against Michigan State for the Red Bandana game. The game will be on these very airwaves following the Red Sox game tomorrow night. The Sox got shut out by the Rays 2-0. The boys are back home to take on the Twins tonight. 7:10 first pitch with Richard Fitz getting the start. You can hang out with Coop at 6:10 for the Mass Mutual pregame show. And then Will Fleming and Joe Castiglione have the call on the Shaw's Star Market, WEEI Red Sox Radio Network, right here on EEI and, as always, on the Odyssey app. Shohei Ohtani has become the first MLB player to join the 50-50 club. So that's 50-plus home runs and 50-plus stolen bases in a single season for Ohtani. That's thanks to his first three-homer game and the first 10 RBI game of his career yesterday.
That was 6-for-6, 3 home runs. Some baseball insiders, Curtis, are suggesting that we are witnessing the greatest single Major League Baseball season by a player ever.
What are the odds on that?
in the form of Shohei Ohtani.
Yep.
Would you
agree? And imagine, he's a pitcher, too. Imagine if he was pitching, he was doing this.
Yeah, next season he's going to pitch. So he's going to do it all next season. I mean, amazing.
I don't even remember what happened to start off the year.
Right. I was going to say, I would love to get the jailhouse interview with the translator right now and see how he's doing.
And Sixers president of basketball operations, Daryl Morey, has announced that the team has signed Joel Embiid to a multi-year contract extension. The deal is reportedly a 3-year, $192.9 million max contract extension that guarantees Embiid a total of $299.5 million through the 2028-29 season. And the Subaru of New England all-wheel driveaway is going on right now. Find your authorized Subaru retailer at subaruofnewengland.com. That's what's trending. Here's Curtis with your weather.
Thank you, Courtney. It is currently 63 degrees in Boston. Cloudy skies. Going to be kind of gray all day. Highs in the upper 60s.
And I was just going to say thank you to Jack, who stopped by the studio from Rhode Island, brought me flowers this morning, and brought the team donuts.
Oh, those are legit flowers.
Yeah, he's the best.
Not mums in a pot.
Nope. Oh. Take that, Santo.
Uh-oh.
He is so sweet, and he drove all the way from Rhode Island this morning to bring us treats. So.
Holy cow.
Oh, boy.
Thank you, Jack.
And I would be remiss, Greg, I forgot to do one thing. The WEEI WooSox report, brought to you by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention Massachusetts chapter, and the WooSox wrap up another great year with the Lehigh Valley. So check that out this weekend.
Right here with Patriots owner Robert Kraft. Now, you know, Bill Belichick and Gerard Mayo have very different leadership styles.
You think so?
Just a little. In what ways have you seen Mayo really install his own culture?
Well, look, Gerard learned a lot from Bill and, the technical background, but they're each special individuals. I've gotten to know Gerard over the last 12, 15 years, and, you know, I picked him 5 years ago to be our next head. He's very special. It's great to have the ability to train under Bill.
Hey, Bezos, get the technology figured out there on Amazon.
Clean it up a little bit.
Seriously, get a good mic on Kraft, would you?
There's some good stuff in there, some good intel.
He said what now? 5 years ago.
Did Belichick know that?
He picked out Gerard Mayo as the head coach.
5 years ago?
I don't know.
That was
so was that the 2019?
It was his first year when he was back. And
Actually, was he even there? I mean, Kraft, I read Reese earlier yesterday, and the story's been out there. It's Jones and Keefe on WEEI. It's Patriots Friday. We're going to talk to DeMarcus Covington soon-ish here on a Patriots Friday. We'll also talk to Mike and Wayne.
He returned in 2019 as the inside linebackers coach. So his first year. So that was, what, Brady's last year with the team.
But what Reese wrote yesterday, and this has been out there, is that they went on a trip to Israel.
Yep, we knew that.
And Mayo was still at Optum. He wasn't even on the coaching staff yet, and he was bridging together like...
Oh, my God. If I hear the Optum story one more time.
The old players with the current players and guys he played with. And Robert Kraft was like, you know, I started thinking, hey, a light bulb went off. That could be my next coach. But that didn't... That he felt stronger there on TV last night than some of the other stuff
I've
read.
Yeah, because I
made the decision 5 years ago, not like, oh... All right, keep an eye on this guy.
What I'd always thought was it was the way it was described was they made the decision a year ago to have him be the head coach in 2 years. They but then the season was so bad that they were like,
they
all
put
right.
it in writing in his contract going into the 2023 year. Yes.
So meaning they made that decision in my mind in like 21 or 2, not 2019 when he hadn't coached a snap yet. Right. He was just joining the team as an inside linebackers coach and you already knew he was going to be the head coach. So that part seems kind of wild to me. And, you know, that's another kind of feather in the cap of Belichick. You know, like if you're on Team Belichick, here's the owner hires your replacement and it's just on the staff, like the coach in waiting, like you're at some bad college team. And you're like, yeah, at some point we're going to turn things over to Mayo. That's bizarre.
It is. So how does that make you feel about the whole hiring process, the Jerod Mayo experience? We can get into it here at 617-779-7937. We've been discussing the game, obviously, all day. How bad was it? How bad will the Patriots be? What went wrong last night? Who's it on? Is it on Jerod Mayo not having the team ready? DeMarcus Covington, who we'll talk to, not a good defensive game plan for Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. The offensive game plan was horrendous. 7 pass plays in their first 9 plays last night.
A lot of good play action, though.
Including play action,
they
which
were
the
taking
Jets,
the cheese.
The Jets never once fell for last night.
Didn't take a bite.
You were telling me there's 2 comments from Van Pelt. I guess Van Pelt is talking now.
Yeah.
And by the way, Jerod Mayo talked earlier this hour. He basically made it sound like they're sticking with Jacoby Brissett. He said, I'll let you know if there's a change at quarterback. And, by the way, the reps are going to stay the same at practice. What was the Van Pelt
Reese tweeted out. Alex Van Pelt explained that the team's success running the ball the first 2 weeks led to him calling more play action passing plays early in the game last night. He says in hindsight, he would have flipped that and called more run plays early.
Good. Yeah. So I will say, I don't think, this is not a second guess by us. We said,
no.
When you throw to the receivers, give Pop Douglas some short, easy stuff, quick game stuff, wide receiver screens, things like that. That's what we said.
Yeah.
We didn't say force feed the ball to Pop Douglas. In fact, we said that's not what you should do. Because
no, we made that very clear.
You run on the Jets.
Well, there's a big difference between 0 targets and 9 targets and a carry.
And 10 opportunities. Right. 9 plus 1, 10 opportunities.
And
right.
So he had 7. So a lot of them were close, right? A lot of them were close to the line of scrimmage to get him the ball. I'm like, okay, that's great. But that should be while the running game, which is your strength and perhaps New York's defense's weakness, you needed more of that. And I know the game kind of gets away from me, and at the end it gets a little bit tilted, but 6 carries for Ramondre Stevenson? Like, they ran for 185 yards against Seattle, and they ran for 78 on 15 carries.
And the Niners ran for like 180 on him, and the Titans ran for like 130 on him.
Oh, on the Jets, exactly.
On the Jets, I'm sorry.
I'm saying the Patriots clearly are a run-first team. They've told anybody who will listen they're a run-first team. They have... a good running back, even though he had a really bad night, but they also didn't really go to him much at all. And they kept trying to get the play action, and the Jets are like, we're not taking the cheese on this. Like, we'll make Brissett beat us, and he's not going to be able to beat anybody.
No, your strength aligned with their weakness.
Which is usually a good formula.
You didn't exploit it on a short week, and that was as non-competitive of a game as you're going to see.
Mm.
By the way, Van Pelt was also asked this, I guess, by Karen Gregan. Will Drake May improve more by playing or watching?
Yes. Okay.
Van Pelt said,
"That's a great question.
I think by watching,
huh?
Hot.
I can tell you from experience, it's not by watching.
Yeah, I did a lot.
Let me make it really clear.
Let me tell you, I did a lot of watching, so much watching, and it was
doesn't help. Actually,
it was pretty rocky.
You need to experience it yourself.
Yeah, some experience was
necessary.
Even the minimal experience is very, very
way better.
Very handy.
By all accounts, it's better. So you think he's going to learn more from just having a watch?
He said, "I think by watching.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
Jacoby's our starter. Jerod said that." until that changes, we got to do everything we can to get the starter ready on Sunday.
Nice.
Not this Sunday, though.
No.
Thank God they're off. No. Yeah. Thank God they have extra time to game plan. I can't wait to see what they cook up with 10 days to get ready for this one.
Oh, my God.
Let's go back to the phones here. 617-779-7937. Steve's waiting patiently in Fall River. Go ahead, Steve.
I called you guys yesterday. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great.
I gave you professional quality advice about this game under playing the Jets.
Yeah, you said, Steve, if I remember correctly, you said they have the better quarterback, you said they have the better roster, they'll win the game. You were right.
I also said that if you looked at his line in the previous game, you were going to be fooled. If you looked at his pass completions, they were crisp. He looked like he was zipping the ball out, and that he would get better with his receivers. I also said the second running back was devastating. And they have two good running backs.
Okay, Steve,
you must have won $1 million on the game.
Yeah, Steve,
congratulations. You picked the game right.
So are the Jets winning the Super Bowl? What are you saying?
No, but the Jets are clearly in the power, moved up to second in this division.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
So we said you were right. Yeah, he was right. No, he was right. I mean, Steve, you were right about that.
You nailed it. You probably cashed in.
So here's what I wonder. Was that vintage Rodgers because Rodgers is locked in and you're going to get MVP-level Aaron Rodgers? Or was he just going against a trash-ass Patriots team?
Well, so I think, not to not answer your question, I think it's kind of both. Like, I think Rodgers, it's game three. He's coming off a big-time injury. He's playing with guys for, in a lot of cases, the third time. So I think he's getting better while the Patriots defense kind of crashing back down to earth. Right, they lose Bentley, so he's one of their more sure tacklers. The pass rush was really mostly just Keon White the first couple of games. And maybe the secondary is getting a little bit exposed because they didn't look good against Geno Smith. Right, so like not like they're this world-beating defense, but I do think Rodgers is going to look like that more often than not the rest of the season.
Yeah, score one for Steve. It was a good call.
Yeah, he crushed it.
Let's go to Sorja in Mansfield. You there this time, Sorja?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How are we?
Good,
pretty good.
I had the mic muted earlier, so thank you so much for taking the call.
No problem.
Yeah. Really quick here, I think all facets of the game, coaching, the players, every Elliott Wolf for not doing anything in the offseason. Everyone looked poor last night. Jacoby Brissett was pressured on 56.5% of the dropbacks, 14 missed tackles by the defense. You got Jerod Mayo saying that, you know, you got to stop the run game. Well, you only had 15 rushing attempts. We're trying to turn Jacoby Brissett into Tom Brady. Like, I don't know what's going on here. I don't know whether you put in Drake May against the 49ers or the Dolphins, but if we don't start Drake May against the Dolphins, I think that's a lot of concern because you think about it. And
okay, Sorja, I agree, and you had a lot of time there, especially for a second call-in with your phone muted the first time.
It happens.
When it comes to the May decision, is this where ownership gets involved? Like, I'm not saying for the Niners game, but like, all right, fine.
It was
you
pretty
guys,
bad last night.
Like that,
the crafts were there.
Last night to me was one of those where you're like, yeah, one of those where you're like, we run the risk of people not watching again, and not like hardcore Patriots fans or even like big sports fans, but like your neutral, casual fans. They look at it and go, why do I need to watch that team again with this quarterback?
Well,
like
week four,
call me when Drake May's in the game, but I'm not watching until then. I think you're teetering on that, to be honest.
I think if week four was at Gillette Stadium, you might have a better chance that the Crafts kind of swoop in there. So if they go with Jacoby, right, to this point, they've let the football guys do the football moves and decisions. So if week four looks anywhere similar to what last night looks like, if it's not Van Pelt and Mayo coming up with the we should go to Drake May, I wouldn't be surprised if they get the – or was it Kern that told us, like – you might not get straight up, hey, you need to play this guy, but you get the sort of, hey, guys, like all of a sudden they're in your office, like you're not normally down
that
here,
current,
and they're like, what's going on with May this week? Like, we're not telling you what to do, but I'm just curious, like, can you tell me what's going on with May this week? And you're like,
any ideas?
Yeah, he's playing. That's great to hear. I'm glad you came up with that decision.
So here's the question, and it doesn't sound like it's going to happen this week against the Niners, which I think is a shame, and I would do. I think it's now time to go to Drake May. Perhaps you disagree. I know the thought police, Greg Bedard, says don't even think about it.
I'm thinking about it.
Mark Daniels says no chance you go to him.
Yes, chance.
I think chance.
Chance.
My favorite card, Monopoly.
Chance?
Yeah,
really?
Oh, yeah, you never know. Roll the dice is a thrill, Keith.
I'll take the oranges. You win the Monopoly, I guarantee you, if you have hotels on the oranges,
oh,
you win every time.
You know what? I like those.
New York Ave.
I like those.
St. James Place.
I like those dark purples right after you pass go.
The cheap ones?
Yeah, Baltic.
The Mediterranean?
Yeah, those are nice.
That's like $60 to
Yeah,
stay
but
there.
They're nice, though, because you cross go, it's demoralizing.
You're better
you
off with Connecticut and the light blues.
You cross go,
yeah,
and then you get your 200, but you don't get your 200 because you landed on Baltic.
No, you're better off, trust me, because right when people go to jail, they come out of jail. If you roll a 6, 8, or 9, you're landing on an orange.
Yeah.
Hotel in New York, $1,000.
Nice. Yeah, but
that's 10 hams.
How much does it cost you to build?
Not that bad. Like $100 for a house. Over,
you're missing the overhead.
It's way better than
there's
boardwalk.
There's no overhead on the dark purples. It costs nothing.
Yeah, but you
it's
but
pocket lint.
As soon as I walk by, go, I get my money to pay you, and I still have some left over. You're going to play forever that way. If I build up the oranges, you're porked.
I'm bleeding you out.
I'm
bleeding you out with the dark purples.
You only have two. There's only two spots.
Yeah, but when you hit it.
I'm telling you, the oranges. Everyone's like, Boardwalk and Park Place. No, no, no. You pay through the nose to build there.
Who can afford those?
You can't.
Seriously.
Paying through the nose. There's luxury taxes hanging out over there. You want the oranges.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's a spot right before free parking. People are like, oh, I'm at free parking. Psych, I'm at New York Ave. $1,000.
That is a swing.
Yeah.
And last night was a swing for the Patriots.
Next thing you know, you're mortgaging properties.
So
trying to trade me the railroad.
You know, Monopoly Junior doesn't have the railroads.
Wait, what?
My kid goes,
The T?
Yeah.
Why do they have the T?
No, my kid goes, let's play Monopoly, Monopoly
sure.
Junior.
Yeah.
I go, yeah, let's play. I go, where are the railroads? He goes, there's railroads. He's all
railroads?
Disappointed. There's no, yeah. He's like, oh, that'd be cool if there were railroads
it's a
in this
safe
game.
Space on
Buy
every turn.
Be a railroad baron. not in the game.
All I have is the railroads.
Yeah, not in the game.
And electric properties.
So, I hope there's a chance he plays, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be this week.
Nope.
Who gives you a better chance behind the offensive line? Who gives you a better opportunity? I think it's Drake May.
Yeah.
I think you saw that late in the game last night. I didn't hate what I saw. He almost threw a pick. He got body slammed to the ground. He also had 4 of their 11 first downs. He moved it on one drive. I think he played better after he was hit. He zipped one into Pop Douglas, which you did not see from Jacoby Brissett. So I like some of that.
And also, let's see what it looks like with him getting all of the practice reps.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what it looks like where Alex Van Pelt knows going into the game. Let's give him a little bit of credit, right? Been in the league a long time.
Yep.
If you are preparing for Drake May, maybe you have a few different calls than you would with Jacoby Brissett. And can't you, just as an experienced NFL coach, kind of scheme it up in a way where you're putting him in fewer chances to get absolutely murdered? And you can also explain to him, be like, listen, I'm glad you got up from that last hit, but it's the NFL. Everything's a little bit faster. You got to get rid of the ball a little bit quicker. Right? You got to make your decisions a little bit quicker. So I think if you told him today he's the starter, and now he has a week and a half to sort of get ready for it and go out there, I think it's going to look a lot better than it did last night. I'm not predicting like, oh, all of a sudden, look out, defenses around the league. Here come the Patriots. But I think you're scoring more than 3 points. You're moving the ball, and you're not just a bore to watch offensively.
As we move into the 4 o'clock hour here, it's Christian Arkin, Andy Hart, WEEI Afternoons, and we're live in the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and the Freedom of Choice Shop Deals built for you on the New England Edition F-150 official truck of the Boston Red Sox. We'll get to your phone calls here in just a minute at 617-779-7937. I see you waiting patiently there on the lines. We will get to you, I promise, but there is a growing chorus, I think, now, and it's getting louder over the course of today. I'm seeing it more online. People who think that Drake May, forget about your plan, forget about waiting for Miami or, you know, keeping him in bubble wrap any longer. Drake May should go out there. Long week. You got 10 days. Get him ready for San Francisco, and let's start the Drake May era with his first start and keep him as the starter now until you can't anymore. And what you just heard there from Jerod Mayo, Jacoby Brissett is the quarterback until I say he isn't.
Mm.
Not he's the quarterback. He's the quarterback until as if it's inevitable until I say he isn't, which implies that he plans to say at some point that he isn't. I don't think that was necessarily on purpose, but I do think there was some purpose behind those words. And with Jerod Mayo, I think that this is something that he's either going to get pressured into by contrast, maybe this was something he never really wanted, this plan with Drake May. Maybe he wanted him to go from week one on, and now he's getting his way. Either way, I do think that this this whole timeline for Drake May, there's going to be some pressure now, and I think that there's going to be even louder over the course of this Sunday, going into next week, people wanting to see him against the Niners.
So at various points, Jerod has tried to say, like, oh, I don't want Jacoby looking over his shoulder, but then more often than not, it's been, but that's some healthy stress.
Right.
And he, remember at one point he said something about there's a guy waiting in the wings that we're getting ready or something. And it's like, huh, mm-hmm. You keep saying I'm the quarterback, but you keep really mentioning a lot of ways that we're getting Drake May ready to take my job. And it's obvious. It's going to happen. And you're right. It's funny because yesterday's game, I feel like somehow the exact same game emboldened or strengthened both poles of the argument. I feel like the people that want him to play are like, it's time. I've seen enough of Jacoby.
Right.
It's May time. And then the others that are worried about playing him behind a bad offensive line are like, did you see that? You can't put Drake May in there. Now is the worst time. That line is terrible.
It was like the State of the Union last night. Everybody just got more entrenched.
Right,
that was basically what it was, yeah.
You dug in with what you thought coming into the game, exiting that game. I am, as is so typical, I'm right down the middle, Mr. Objective Andy. No, I would not start him in San Francisco. On the road against that defense, we were just talking about the Jets getting their ass whooped in San Francisco, mm-hmm. right? That's Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers got thrown to the Wolves. Do you
Sam Darnold kind of carved him up.
Well, okay. Counterexample. Touche. Yeah. Host one. Well done. But do you really want to throw Drake May out in that situation on a road game? You know, a game you're supposed to lose against a defense that can get after it a little bit and make your life tough against an offense that's probably going to score some points. So both sides, you're facing a tough defense and you're going to be chasing, which means, hey, Drake, good luck behind this line. I'm going to need you to drop back and throw it 30 times to try to come back in this game. I as much as this game on Thursday night would have been the worst case scenario, in my opinion, to start him, next week is the second worst case scenario. Then after that, conversation is fully open. We're all on the table.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, if you want everything to be perfect and his entry into the league to be this perfect thing, then yeah, sure. But I'm sort of past that at this point. I'm ready for him to get the bumps and lumps and everything that you take as a rookie to just get that over with. That's sort of where I'm at with all this. Will it be a perfect thing? Will he get sacked a lot? Will he be running around, getting away from those Niners defenders? Yeah, probably. I mean, that's probably what's going to happen. I'd imagine that's what's going to happen. That's probably what's going to happen if they play the 49ers next year and he has an entire year under his belt. I mean, they're a good defense. You're going to see that. That's part of playing football in the NFL. I'm ready for him to start experiencing this. I don't think that there's really any reason to keep this thing going, this charade going right now of waiting for the perfect time. There's not going to be a perfect time this year, I don't think.
Correct.
I think you might as well just get this thing going. Start the clock. Like that's how I feel. And let's get him a little bit closer to the quarterback we want him to be. And if that means he has to start off in a hostile environment against a good team, oh well. You know, I mean, I'm sure there's other quarterbacks out there that started their career the same way and they were fine. I don't think it's going
to.
One game's going to ruin him, and I don't think that it's going to really do him any favors to just keep pushing this off. Just get it over with, you know, rip the Band-Aid off. Let's get this thing going here.
But it's only week four. I mean, he doesn't have to start in San Francisco. I don't, like, there's no real urgency. You decided there was no urgency when you didn't start him day one.
Right, right, but that's what I'm saying. I wanted him to start day one to get to, for what I just said, for them to get this going already.
But they didn't, so they don't feel any urgency, and it's a worse spot. It's a much worse spot than week one even would have been. I would have been more okay with week one and week two, and now he might be ready for the Jets and the Niners. You didn't give him any chance to get up to speed. The offensive line is banged up and worse, so I would wait till after San Francisco to figure it out. But am I the only one who thought, and probably the answer is yes, Andy, because you have a weird brain and think of weird things. Mm-hmm. They had a cutaway late in the game, probably right before Drake came in, where it was Drake and Jacoby sitting on the bench, and they both looked kind of sad. Jacoby was beat up, and Drake was just like the young guy. And it reminded me of Billy Madison when the young kids are like, I can't wait to get to high school. And he's like,
yeah.
Don't you ever say that. Stay here as long. And it was like Drake saying, I can't wait to get in the game. And he's like, don't
Brissette's
say
like,
that.
You want no part of this offensive line, trust me.
You don't. Stay on this bench as long. Grab his fat little cheek. Stay on this bench as long as you can, Drake. You don't ever go out there. And there's some truth to that. Because Drake may want to play, but it's going to get real and real fast when he gets out there. It's going to be, there's going to be lumps. There's going to be bad times. And as we've seen all over, Bryce Young, the classic example, but more importantly,
How do we think Gerard Mayo is going to handle it when he does Will Levis type things? Because he will. He's going to throw like a pitch that some D end picks off and goes the other way, and Gerard Mayo's going to be
he's
thinking.
He's going to throw a pitch that gets picked off.
Yep. There's going to be dumb. I'm telling you.
That's a very specific prediction. something you don't see very often. And yeah, I mean, listen, he's going to have problems. Obviously, he's going to have problems. That's going to happen in his first game, regardless, whenever his first game is. Let's just get his first game over. I think so. I think any rookie quarterback, you're going to see that.
It's more likely to happen against a good defense than a lesser defense.
Sure.
The 49ers are a better defense than the Dolphins, and it might who knows what the Dolphins are going to be with Skylar Thompson. They may not score a lot of points. They may be frustrated themselves. Maybe you can
Drake May doesn't have to go against Skylar Thompson. He has to go against the defense, and that's sort of the point.
He absolutely has to go against Skylar Thompson. Just like last night, Jacoby Brissett had to go against Aaron Rodgers, and when Aaron Rodgers went right down the field and it was 7 and then put another 7, Jacoby Brissett's like, oh, so I can't just turn around and hand the ball off and we're going to win this game with ease tonight? You're absolutely the way this team is built. Every team.
They would have had to win the game 3-0 then. I mean, come on. Like, Aaron Rodgers, it was obviously not a great thing to see him putting up all those points, but it's not like that mattered to Jacoby Brissett. He gave him field goal range one time, and it was because they had 2 penalties. I mean, I don't think Aaron Rodgers had much to do with that. I think it was just a question of, you're not equipped for this. You can't go against this defense. This is a team that just outclasses you, and that's it. I mean, that's the bottom line. It's gonna keep happening.
Yeah, no, it is gonna. But he is absolutely going against the quarterback too. Like, the quarterback matters, right? Like, it's that
to
old
an extent.
Thing.
Yes,
I mean,
such a mismatch. I don't know. I mean,
it was a home game for the Chargers, but Justin Herbert's first game was against Kansas City the year after they won the Super Bowl.
And you're going against Patrick Mahomes. You go into that game saying, probably not going to win a 10-7 battle today. Probably going to have to score some points.
They lost 23-20 in overtime.
That was back when they scored more points than they
scored
these days.
By the way, before we go to break here and before we hear what's trending from Brian, Alex Van Pelt today, he had a take on what would be more beneficial for Drake May this season, either playing or watching. Here's what he said.
I'm just curious, in terms of developing Drake, what you feel is the better course of action at this stage, him learning by watching or by playing?
I still think it's by watching. I think there's a lot to be learned yet. And that's where I'll stand on that. I think Jacoby is our starter, like Coach said. And until that changes, I think we got to do everything we can to get the starter ready to win a game on Sunday.
Okay. Alex Van Pelt still thinks all the value is in watching.
Yeah, and Gerard, I feel like Mayo, Alex Van Pelt is making the decision. I'll be honest.
It sounds like it, because Gerard Mayo says
Mayo's getting very defensive about it.
Players get better playing football, and here he is saying, no, you get better by watching. And what's he doing? He's watching. 617-779-790, that's a good point. 93.7 is the phone number. We got full phone lines right now. We will get to all your phone calls right after Brian tells you what's trending.